You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
And that's right, your ears are not deceiving you. It is yours truly, Grandpa Dan, with you for a little extra feature for you this week. Going to be doing some extra shows, at least for the next couple of weeks, kind of as a personal thank you for those of you who've been really supportive with everything that's been going on for me here as of recently. And not to mention to alleviate my own, I have selfish reasons as well, to alleviate my own insufferable boredom as I've been so basically confined to the house. I've been under like house arrest, health imposed house arrest. So yeah, it is great. We're going to kind of be obviously doing something different than the Parish of the Patriots show, and it's essentially kind of a go through the news topics type of deal, basically a daily nationalist type of format. Only no Sven Longshanks. I'm sorry, you're just going to have me solo. But of course, you do catch me along with Sven. You can catch me along with Sven on the Friday installment of the Daily Nationalist. So it's always a good time. Like I said, glad you joined us this week. We're going to get into, I thought what we'd discuss is kind of old news, but I think maybe not, because I haven't really talked about the whole, you know, truckers protesting in Canada thing. I haven't really hit on that much. And like I say, I'm going to use an article from last week. May seem kind of stale. And, you know, this is supposedly more or less wrapped up, or so we're being told. I'm not sure it has, and I'll get into that here in just a few minutes. Before I go through the article, just kind of a few comments on the trucker protest thing. I mean, most of it was handled by the government in like the worst ham-handed way possible. It was like if you were purposely trying to sabotage yourself to have it blow up in your face, this is what they did. So I find this interesting to see, you know, what's going to happen. I mean, because they really did handle it bad. And when I say that, it's not like, you know, I'm sympathetic towards Trudeau, towards the government position here. But you see, when you're truth seekers like we are, and I say we because I include you, the listeners, in that, you know, you're generally capable of some form, some certain amount of critical thinking. You know, it just kind of goes hand in hand. And in so doing, you're able to kind of put yourself in the other side's shoes. Like, when we talk about, oh, how the government should have handled this, we're not saying, oh, well, you know, we support the Canadian government's position in this at all and side against the truckers. It's just looking at it strictly from a strategic standpoint, from a standpoint of observing the tactics and being critical thereof. And as we get into the article today, you'll see that the shitlibs are completely unable to do this. They are incapable of this. And like I say, as we go through the article here in a few minutes, that'll become more and more plain to see. Now, as far as the way this was handled, when they went to you, they obviously, for starters, the government was completely unprepared for this. Why? I don't know. I mean, you would think they would have run these scenarios over and over and be, you know, have plans for them. But when the truckers parked their trucks, they had like no idea. Obviously, I mean, Trudeau ran off and hid and said he had the COVID. We can blame everything on COVID now. He claimed he had the COVID and disappeared and hid. And then, you know, made some statements, called them all Nazis and white supremacists. That's been so overused now, that really didn't gain any traction. And then, of course, just we wound up with this really heavy-handed approach. Now, when the truckers blocked the bridge, you know, I was watching this, and I watched these things again. I mean, kind of from a critical standpoint of, you know, how should the government handle this? And I repeat again, this isn't say I support the government's position. You just look at these things and it's like, you know, what is the best way to go about to achieve the goals they're trying to achieve? Now, when it came to blocking the bridge, that I knew they were going to have to deal with that. I mean, they obviously didn't know how to deal with just the simple protest itself. But when it moved to blocking the bridge, I knew they were going to have to handle that. And they handled it more or less like I expected. You know, they got a court to judge, you know, to issue an order saying, because, you know, the court's supreme in the land. And they got a court to judge, you know, issue an order saying this is illegal and they can be cleared off the bridge. And they were. I was a little surprised. I kind of had more than half expected them to put a news story out about, you know, a dying child was in an ambulance and was unable to get to the hospital in time because these evil white supremacist, racist, neo-Nazi truckers were blocking the bridge, you know, because most people would be too stupid to sit there and think, well, they could have flown the kid with a helicopter. I was a little surprised they didn't go ahead and throw one of those stories in there, but it apparently wasn't necessary. They got a court to issue a piece of paper saying they don't have the right to be there. They don't have the right to block the bridge. And they subsequently cleared that out. Now that went according more or less like I figured they would do. I mean, that was, they weren't going to be able to let them block that bridge, you know, simply, not simply just because of they can't, blocking the trade route and all, it became more of a public spectacle and was encouraging it to spread into the U.S. as well as around the world. So the way they handled that was more or less like I expected they would. I mean, but then there came the answer to the initial protest itself. And then this gets into where they handled it, in my opinion, in the absolute worst way possible. Now, again, nothing may come of it, but it was the worst way possible, because they then turn around and use essentially brute force. They went with, we're going to send the militarized police in. I wonder how many of those people with their Blue Lives Matter mentality, I wonder how they feel now that they sent the cops in to beat them up, run them over with horses, impound the trucks, and to add insult to injury. Now they're coming out and saying, well, all these impounded trucks, maybe we're just going to sell them and keep the money for ourselves. I mean, it was just be like, if I was being consulted on this and they were like, okay, what's the worst possible way we could handle that? I would say to go in with brute force and to make a spectacle of beating the shit out of these people and trampling them with horses and dragging them all off. That would be the worst way to handle it. And then it'd be like they followed up and were like, hey, what about the idea of if we go ahead and do that and then like, we make an announcement that we're going to maybe keep the trucks and sell them and keep the money for ourselves. I would just be like, you're out of your minds. What they should have done, in my opinion, is they could have simply ignored it. I mean, they could. I mean, they're blocking up traffic in the Capitol and honking their horns. Look, they have total control of the media. They could just have the media not report on it and everybody would forget it. At some point in time, the people, the protesters were going to get burned out on it. They were going to get tired of it and they're going to go home. You know, it's like a party. And it really was like a party. You have bouncy houses and you got people out there barbecuing and this real family-friendly atmosphere. But you know, if you go over to someone's house and they're having a party and a barbecue, and you might be having the best time of your life. But, you know, at some point in time, you're going to get tired of it and you're going to go home, right? They could have simply ignored this and eventually had the media not report it, just pretend it's not happening. And eventually the people would have got tired and it would have more or less, I believe, probably fizzled out. But you see, they're not that smart. And they refuse to pay people like me a lot of money in order to, like, advise them on how to handle these situations. I wouldn't want to advise them anyway, but I mean, they should be paying somebody that has a clue on how to handle these situations, because obviously they don't. It was handled in the worst way possible. You may be saying, well, why is that? I mean, they went in there and they ended it quick. They ended it quick, but it made a spectacle of it. Let me tell you something. I regular working guy myself and had my exposure. Obviously, you know, I've known through my life quite a number of truck drivers. And truck drivers are a unique breed. Truck drivers are a unique breed. There, you can't organize, like, you know, if you tried to organize and say, we're going to get all the truck drivers to quit driving their trucks in protest, you couldn't really do that because they're so independent. They're so individualistic in their mentality. They just have this natural tendency to have this attitude of nobody is going to tell me what to do, even if it's good for them. If we're going to organize a national trucker strike, y'all just stay home. They'd be like, you ain't going to tell me to stay home. What am I supposed to do? That's how they have this mentality. But on the flip side of that, they tend to have a real, what do I want to say? They have a real almost clannish attitude when it comes to other truck drivers. You know, if you're another truck driver, you're in the club. You know, they roll up in the truck stop, you know, or they'll flash their lights to let each other over. They're on the radios talking about how idiotic drivers are, whatever. You know, they have a very sympathetic attitude. It's a very much you're in the club if you're a fellow truck driver. Now, by making a public spectacle of this, by going in here and kicking these people's ass, and you know, that runs counter, that flies in the face, it aggravates and instigates that clannish mentality that exists among truck drivers. How can that backfire? Your average truck driver is sitting at home watching. He's not down there. You can go in here and beat these people up, run them over with horses, and haul their trucks off, and then say you're going to sell them and keep the money for yourself. You can do that, okay? But what about all of the truck drivers not participating? Because to be honest, most of the truck drivers in the country weren't participating. They were doing their trucker thing. We know this because if they were participating, the country would have gone down in flames already because everything has to be hauled by truck. So what about your average truck driver who's not participating, who's sitting at home and he sees this going on? What if individually, one by one, these truck drivers see this, get pissed off and say, well, I just ain't going to drive my truck. Now, this presents a problem. Depending on how big the scale goes. This is where it could spiral out of hand. This is why the way they handled it was really the most moronic, stupid way it could have been handled, because it's the most dangerous. Now, granted, nothing may come of it. I'm not making dire predictions here. But you know, you want to mitigate the situation. Again, if I was plotting strategy for these people, look, they're not hurting anything. You know, yeah, it's kind of an embarrassment and whatnot, but if you just tell your media to go ahead and quit covering them, pretend they're not there, and ignore them, they will fizzle out and go away. They'll get tired and go home. At some point in time, the money will run out. You know, it won't be something fresh and exciting, and they'll go home. You know, don't go in there and make a spectacle of it, because that has the most potential to blow up in your face. It really does. If the individual truck drivers, if you have enough individual truck drivers at home, watch this happen and get pissed off and say, I'm just not going to drop my truck then. In solidarity, I'm going to drive. It doesn't have to be organized. In fact, it's better if it's not organized, because as I said earlier, truck drivers don't want nobody telling them what to do. They're just almost psychotic like that. I mean, they take that individual attitude of no one's going to tell me what to do to the extreme. So, I mean, the fact is, no, if individual truck drivers get personally angry about it and say they're going to stay home, what are you going to do? You can't send your militarized badge drones to each truck driver's house and say, look, we're going to beat you up and throw you in jail if you don't get in your truck and start driving and hauling stuff to the grocery store or to Home Depot or Lowe's or wherever the hell. They can't do that. It's not possible. What are they going to do? If enough truck drivers just personally get mad and say, I'll just stay home for a week. And understand, that's all it takes. Every one of these stores, from your grocery store to your home improvement stores to whatever the hell kind of store you're talking about, they all run on this basically zero inventory policy. Everything's programmed out to where the stock runs out right about the time the truck shows up. And the truck's supposed to show up every 2 or 3 days. Everything is timed out. When I was a kid, you go to the grocery store and you go and it's like they got baked beans on sale. And you're going to go down there and you look at the shelf and it's like, there's the baked beans on sale. There's sale. There ain't no baked beans. You go find one of the stalker guys and you're like, hey, do y'all have any more baked beans in the back? And they say, sure, hold on, let me go look. And they go to the back and then they come back out with a case of baked beans. How many you want? I want 3 cans. Get you 3 cans. And he puts the rest on the shelf. They had inventory in the back. They don't do that. They haven't done that for a long time now. Now, you go to the store. If they ain't no baked beans, you can be like, hey, y'all got any in the back? And they just laugh at you. Like, they ain't shit in the back. We got a break room in the back. That's all that's in the back. There ain't nothing in the back. You got to wait till the truck comes tomorrow or 2 days from now. It's all run like that. The truckers quit running for a week. Everything's going up in flames. Going down in flames. I don't. It's all going down the toilet. You think you got food shortages now? 80% of your truck drivers personally get offended by this spectacle you just put on and decide to stay home, you're in a lot of trouble. And it gets worse. It gets worse because then if that happens And then all of the other workers look at this and they're like, yeah, I think that's bullshit. And now you got your dock workers say, well, we ain't going. You got your different factory workers say, yeah, well, hell, we can't ship the stuff out anyway. The truckers ain't running. I'm going to stay home too. Hell, you people at food service decide they're going to stay home. You wind up with a completely decentralized, unorganized, yet general strike is the worst case scenario. Because now you don't have anybody. It's not like when unions do a general strike, because then you can bring the union leaders in and pay them off or negotiate with them and bring an end to it. The worst case scenario is a general strike with no leaders, just everybody in the country or a huge amount of people in the country saying, piss on it, I ain't going to work. Who do you negotiate with? What do you do? And then it becomes, and again, then it becomes the demands get out of hand. Now it's too late. Now you can't go in and say, look, we'll go ahead and lift the COVID restrictions for now until the public safety is threatened again. No, because then everybody's demands get gibberish. They get all over the place. No, well, we want a free beer, too, on Tuesdays. And we want a 20-hour work week with 40-hour pay. Yeah, we want. Yeah, it gets out of hand. The demands get unreasonable. There's no one to negotiate with. And you've got a mess. And your police can do nothing for you. Your military can do nothing for you. You just made a mess out of things. This is the worst way. This is why this was the worst way for them to have handled it. Now, again, I don't know. Maybe nothing will come of it. They're obviously thinking nothing will come of it. But I tell you what, if things spiral up, we're going to find out real quick how, whether or not these polls they put out, how bad they're skewed. You know, that all of these people in Canada, all these people, they support all of this. They, the government wants, the people want the government to do these things. We'll find out. I mean, you'll find out if that's true, because if you wake up one day and the country's shut down because a bunch, you know, a majority of the workers are refused to work, then you can be rest assured that their polls are absolute bullshit. Anyway, we'll go ahead and get into our article today. This is just yet another case of how your run-of-the-mill, I don't know, shit-lib journalists have like essentially no self-awareness, you know, no clue as to what's going on. I mean, there's no capability. So, I mean, I spoke early on that, you know, as critical thinkers / truth seekers, you know, that goes hand in hand. And in being able to do so, we can do like we just did here, put ourselves in the government's position, be like, how would we handle this? You know, what would be the best way to do this? You see, shit libs, journalists, that type of people are incapable. You have to understand that they are completely incapable of doing that. They live in a bubble, and anything, even just pretending, just using their imagination, they don't have any, using your imagination to think of things outside of that bubble, they're incapable of this. This article comes from the AP, and it is titled, "In GOP Embrace of Truckers, Some See Racist Double Standard." Racist double standard, because of course they do. Former President Donald Trump. Oh, we got to get him in there. The mean orange man. Former President Donald Trump, who repeatedly called Black Lives Matter protesters thugs and anarchists, said there's a lot of respect for the overwhelmingly white truckers who blocked streets in the Canadian capital and shut down border crossings with the U.S. to oppose COVID-19 restrictions. To Republican Senator Ted Cruz, the truckers who parked bumper to bumper are heroes fighting for a righteous cause. Fox News Channel Sean Hannity sent solidarity, love, and support to the drivers, who also defied police orders to clear Ottawa's streets and ignored a court order forbidding them from blaring their horns. GOP Senator Rand Paul encouraged them to head south and clog streets in the U.S. The embrace of the truckers by some of the nation's most prominent conservative voices has drawn new accusations of hypocrisy and allegations that GOP leaders apply a racist double standard to large protests, including the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol, involving mostly white crowd. White crowd of Trump supporters. Now, as I always said, the more they lie, the more gibberish you have to get, because it just takes a whole lot of, I mean, you can usually whip the truth out you know, at least the high points of the truth in a couple, three sentences, at the most a paragraph. But when you're being lied to, it requires an entire page of gibberish for it to make sense. Now, some of this, I think, is unintentional. It's just the fact that they lack any sort of self-awareness or critical thinking ability. And so they just run around in a bubble because they lie to themselves. They're not just lying to you. And that's something I think is important to keep in mind when you read stuff like this, when you go through the news from these people, and you look at it and you're like, well, they're obviously lying. Well, yes, obviously they do. They lie literally about everything. We always talk about how the media lies about literally everything they report. And I think too often we have this mindset that they're sitting there going, how can we trick everybody today? You know, how can we lie to them today? But I think it really goes beyond that. It starts from a point of they live in a world where they lie to themselves. They are in constant denial of reality. So since they're constantly lying to themselves, you have to understand this gibberish is coming from them. This is part of, you're probably getting a peek. You're getting a sneak peek into the mindset of how these people's internal dialogue actually works. They sit around and have this sort of conversation with themselves where they talk about hypocrisy for voicing support for these protesters. They themselves have condemned it while celebrating Black Lives Matter protests, which amounted to the reality of stores being looted, burned, people being killed in the streets, assaults happening. There were very violent protests, regardless of the media sitting there going, no, that's not the truth. You're looking at, you get a snapshot when they lie to you and give you all this gibberish. You get a snapshot of the internal dialogue these poor people have to suffer through to convince themselves. You know, to convince themselves that their worldview is correct, even though everything in reality is flying in the face of that. Oh, well, it's hypocrisy. They're calling, they denounced Black Lives Matter protesters as quote unquote thugs and anarchists. Well, that's because they were. I mean, that is what we saw. You know, I mean, and of course, when it comes to the trucker protesters, what do we see? They have bouncy houses. There were no bouncy houses during the BLM protests. There were burning houses. There were no bouncy houses. There weren't people out there. Yeah, there were people out there having barbecues and a good time and dancing and music and people sitting around. You notice one thing that's lacking from all the reports on this trucker protest was reports of brawls breaking out. Shootings, drive-by shootings, people getting into gang fights. You notice that was all missing? Yeah, I wonder why. And yet they have the nerve to sit here and whine about, you know, the hypocrisy and the double standard that they're praising these trucker protesters when they condemned the BLM protesters. This is a snapshot, it's a glimpse into the tortured mind, the tortured reality that these people live in. Going back to our article here, earlier this month, the Republican National Committee called the January 6th attack legitimate political discourse. But only months before the insurrection, Trump, Cruz, and other conservatives excoriated protests against police brutality and racial injustice that were largely peaceful, with some instances of looting and unrest. This shows again that there is just an unequal right to express dissent in the United States, said Karen Pietalour, a professor at Boston University's School of Law. She called conservative support, quote, two-faced, saying that conservatives appear to support a white conservative rights movement, but when you have Black Lives Matter protesters on the street, they are thugs. They scare you. Well, no, people tend to be upset when they watch people looting, burning, attacking other people, attacking people trying to go back and forth to work in their cars, trying to go to the hospital, ambulances trying to get to the hospital being attacked. Yeah, people tend to not like that. Now, again, you notice, and you always want to pay attention to this, but you noticed the double standard here. They hate the trucker protest, largely because they do see white people there, and they hate any time they see like white people like getting along and doing their thing. Notice they hate that. They feel no compulsion to be sympathetic towards these people. I've seen zero, zilch, nada articles written saying, you know, well, these people do kind of have a point. I kind of disagree with them on because of this, this, and this logical answer. But they kind of, you know, from their standpoint, you can kind of understand that. No, there's zero. There's none of that. But they're all in on BLM. They're all for that. And yet they make the assertion that it is white conservatives who have this obligation to show support to BLM. Otherwise, they're hypocrites. You see, if they don't show support and solidarity to, you know, to the anti-white race movement, then they're hypocrites in supporting any kind of, you know, anything that looks remotely white or reasonable. And again, you gotta love the caveat they put there. There were some incidences of looting and violence, but it was largely peaceful. Where are the instances of looting and riots, you know, and violence associated with the trucker protest? Where is that? Because, you know, if there was one, they would have been on that like stink on shit. I mean, you know, they would have. But there's nothing. There's crickets because there wasn't any. There weren't any drive-by shootings. There weren't any store burnings. There weren't anybody walking out of with breaking windows or doing any of that stuff. And yet they want to put up this air of these are the same thing. These are the same thing. And you're not standing by your principles of being for political protest if you don't support the rioting and burning, but you support these other people having a cookout and saying we'd like our rights back. Conservatives counter that there is a double standard on the other side, that liberals support the idea of protesting until they disagree with the cause. No, you see, liberals don't have any standards at all. It's just about getting what they want. If conservatives would have that attitude, they might actually be some pushback against this constant move down the toilet in clown world that we're on, but they don't do that. They don't seem to care anything about getting results. Instead, they just want to, brag about, you know, their values in vague abstract terms, and they never want to push back to the point of getting anything they want. The liberals do not have standards. They just have goals. This is what they want to achieve, and they don't care, whatever. If peaceful protesting will achieve that, they will do peaceful protesting. If burning down the city and killing people will do that, they will burn down the city and kill people to do that. It's just achieving what they want. It's violence and brutality at the end of the day, but it is achieving a goal. I mean, I can understand it. I can put myself in their shoes and say, yeah, it's a very good workable strategy for them to get what they want. Conservatives are over here going, getting what we want is not as important as to holding to our standards and ideal. This is why they fall, by the way, time and time again. They'll fall for this distraction of the leftists waving their hands and saying, oh, you're being hypocritical. Then they stop everything and they, oh, no, I'm not. No, I'm not being hypocritical. I'm absolutely not being hypocritical. They fall for it over and over again, you know, because they have this inability to try to actually achieve anything. They run around and try to defend this vague, ill-defined ideology they have, which is really, anyway, let's go ahead through the article. I'm going to keep going on, and this is going to turn into a way longer show than it's supposed to be. Let's see. I'm going to skip down a little bit here. If y'all want to read the whole, because a lot of this is kind of rehash of things we've already knew transpired. I don't want to wade through the entire gibberish here. The support from conservatives in the U.S. goes beyond the words of politicians, right-wing activists who oppose pandemic mandates, and Canada's Liberal Prime Minister Justin Trudeau have also donated money to the demonstrations, hoping that the protests will help motivate American voters ahead of this year's midterm elections. Oh, you see, it's one of the things, some of the questions we used to raise during the whole BLM stuff is who's paying for this? You know, how dare they? They've donated money to something they support. This is scary. This is horrible. BLM protesters were being bussed in from other areas of the country, and nobody seemed to ask. Well, I mean, we were asking, but the media sure as hell wasn't asking, is who's paying for the buses? Where's the money coming from? How come you have all of this perfectly coordinated stuff? You know, it seems like this is being organized somewhere. And they throw around this term terrorism constantly. They call these people terrorists for having barbecues and bouncy houses. And yet they refused when you have political terrorism literally happening of attacking people, assaulting people, killing people, burning buildings, stealing things, and causing utter chaos. And nobody in the government, nobody in the media for sure, wanted to ask, where's the money coming from? Who's organizing this? And yet here we have what? We have this hand waving. We have this false, this fake ass hysteria about, oh my gosh, they're donating money to these people. Mario Murrow, a black political consultant who has served both GOP and Democratic governors in Michigan, called Republicans' support for the Canadian protests, quote, hypocrisy at its highest level. Who gives a shit? I mean, seriously, the left, the so-called left, obviously doesn't care about being called hypocrites, about hypocrisy. This article proves it. The lack of self-awareness that would be required for this article proves that. And yet, conservative, it always seems to bother them, doesn't it? They don't want to be called that. They don't want to be called hypocrite. They don't want to be called hypocritical. It's almost as bad as being called a racist. Yep, they... You know, it's time that the conservatives learn from the nationalists and quit giving a shit about these names they get called. But of course, they can't seem to do that. And this is why the quote unquote left is able to always control the narrative. Let's see here. There is no way that the supporters, especially Republicans, can justify the funding support, the moral support, and the political statements they are making by supporting these tactics, Morrow said. He also said the protesters would not get the same support if they were anything other than conservative white individuals. They would have been locked up day one. This is an amazing statement, isn't it? We saw people literally committing felonies during the BLM protests. We literally, on camera, committing felonies. And if they were arrested at all, they were immediately turned back out. And you have this guy here talking about, oh, they'd have been locked up day one. For sure. There's no way that these people can justify the... But sure they can. Yeah. What do you mean you can't justify? I love this interview, but we'll back that statement up. There's no way they can justify it. Why not? Why not? If you're against all of this COVID nonsense, you notice they're trying to distract from what the actual topic is, because it's their polls that everybody supports this is bullshit. You know, everybody supports being locked in their houses and being having their lives dictated by the government. There's no way you can justify the support. Well, yes, there is. If you agree with the message that you don't want, you know, all of this, you'd really like to have your God-given rights back. Then, yeah, of course you can justify. What do you mean? This ball's aim, you can't justify. Why? Because you say so? Explain that. They wouldn't be supporting it if it was anybody but conservative white individuals. It's funny because if you looked at the footage of these trucker protests in Canada, they weren't just white people there. I mean, yeah, they were overwhelmingly white, but you had all of these other people there too who just so happened to maybe they want they want their rights too. You know, this is always these, because we live with this constant, as nationalists, we're constantly called racist. We're just pretty much immune to it at this point because it's never ending. But you know, this is always them that brings up, because it comes down to so much of this is anti-white race hate agenda. But they constantly are the ones to bring up race. If it wasn't conservative white individuals, they would have been locked up. Day one, even, you know, forget what you saw, forget what you remember happening. Just listen to what I'm having to say. Who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? This is what conservatives have to get through their head. It is a anti-white race hate agenda. Look, I know you don't see race and you don't want to be called a racist and all that. They're going to call you that anyway. You know, there's a reason these people always bring up white, and it's always in derogatory and in a negative context. Have you ever seen any one of these people ever talk about quote-unquote white people, white whatever, whiteness in a positive context? You may not want to see race. I understand that. But your opponents do. And in fact, it's a critical part of their agenda. And it is an anti-white race hate agenda. You got to get that through your head. I mean, it's obvious. Look at what they are saying. You don't have to listen to me. Go and read what they're writing. Look at what they're saying. Ask yourself, what does it mean when they talk about, quote unquote, ending whiteness? What does that mean? Is that something to be concerned about? I personally think it's something to be concerned about and take seriously. I tend to take people at their word. And when they say, we want to end you, we want to end you, I tend to take that pretty serious, you know, and think it's something that needs to be at least talked about, you know. But no, you've got to understand that this is a part of that. This is a critical part of that. This is why they always bring up white people. This is why it's bad if they see white people doing anything positive. You know, it doesn't matter what everybody else does, because that's part of the anti-white race hate agenda. Is it white people doing anything? You'd be sitting here conservative, listen to this, and you'd be like, oh, why are you dragging race into this? I'm not. These people are. Look at the article again. The link will be up. You can go back and read the article for yourself. It's them. It is them who always brings race up over and over. And no, it does no good to sit here and say, oh, see, well, we can point at them and say they're the real racists. They don't care. They don't have standards. They have an agenda. They want to get things done. They're not like your conservative politicians who just want to stand up there and posture and preen about their standards and their, you know, and their principles while achieving absolutely nothing. This is why they're winning and you're not. You have to wrap your mind around the reality. Look, if someone, if you were sitting at home like peacefully and somebody like broke into your house, or you're laying in bed and you hear somebody breaking your house in the middle of the night, I mean, you don't want that to be the case, right? I mean, you've been sitting there like, I just want to sleep. I don't want this reality to be here that someone has broken into my house. What do I do? Now, if you just pull the covers over your head and say, well, I'll just pretend there's nobody in my house because that's what I want it to be, things aren't going to turn out well for you. You're going to have to figure out what to do and deal with the reality that somebody has broken into your house. It's important that these conservatives figure out a way to deal with the reality of the agenda of these people. It's not a pleasant reality. It's not what anybody wants. I don't want it. Nobody wants it. They want it, though. And you've got to deal with the reality of that. We're going to wrap on up on that note. Hopefully you got something out of it. I'm a little bit rusty at doing that. So aside from the Friday installment with Sven, and that's easy because you got somebody there to go, you know, to banter back and forth with. Those are easy shows to do. Doing these like news topic solo shows like this, it's not really my forte. I don't really do that, as regular listeners of the Parish of the Patriot show understand. But hopefully you got something out of it, and hopefully you got something out of this discussion. Like I say, I'm going to do that probably at least for a couple weeks here, so I hope you enjoy it. And I'll be here on the plan is to be here on Friday for the Friday Daily Nationalist with Sven Longshanks. And of course, as always, you can catch my show on Tuesdays, The Parish of the Patriot. So until then, stay sane, keep the faith, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.